Another phrase that lends itself to the efficacy of such campaigns is action logic. And you use a thing that we use in literature, show rather than tell, which is fantastic. Give us the luminous details. And you give an example of an action that was perhaps devoid of action logic at the Republican National Convention in the year 2000. You're already wincing and laughing about that.
Oh, and because it's become very popular. A lot of people think, well, that's the thing to do. If you're upset with something, go into the street, sit down, and block traffic. And that's become a kind of knee-jerk reaction among protesters in many cities and in the United States and other countries too. And it's a ridiculous knee-jerk. I mean, knee-jerk is never as good as thoughtful, right? But if you're going to have a knee-jerk reaction, you certainly don't need to have one in which what you're doing is disrupting the lives of people who, from the point of view of the spectrum of allies, are somewhere on the spectrum other than your opponent. You're never, when you're out there just jumping out and stopping traffic, you're not proposing a challenge. You're not actually confronting the opponent that you want to confront, or barely. What you're really doing is throwing out of whack the lives of people that you would love them to love you. You would love them to be on your side. But people rushing to get to daycare, you know, to pick up their child, or rushing to get that loaf of bread before they go home, are not going to be very fond of you because you are stopping them in a tremendous traffic jam. It's really stupid. We say it lacks action logic.
And in the case of the Republican National Convention, some guy who was blocked said, or I think it was a woman who said, I hate Republicans too, but you're not making me want to be on your side. I mean, I'm paraphrasing.
That's right. That's right.
And she said, I hope they get arrested.
I hope they get, yeah, they ought to arrest your ass because what you're doing is really messing up our lives. Messing up people's lives in order to win them over? This is a very strange concept. But it's a tremendous lack of imagination. And it's one reason why it's important to keep pointing out that there are 199 methods documented on the internet that are available for protests. 199. So if you're telling me the only things available are stopping traffic or having a march or having a rally, that's another thing. Boring rallies are going on all over the country. Boring marches from A to B are happening all over the country. Why we want to bore our participants with actions like that, I don't know. So for people who believe that marches and rallies and disrupting traffic are the only three things to do, good news, 196 other methods are on the internet waiting to be done. Please go on the internet. It's not that hard to find it. And look at the particular place where you can look on the internet is just Google it. You'll find it by Googling Global Nonviolent Action Database. Nonviolent Action Database or Global Nonviolent Action Database will get you 199 methods.
There was a rally in this town during the presidential campaign for Bernie Sanders that had a direct action in the middle of it.
Oh.
By Black Lives Matter.
Oh, yes.
By preventing Bernie Sanders from speaking because they felt his campaign was not addressing issues of race. Do you remember that?
I do. That was really important. That really helped turn his campaign around with regard to that. Well done.
Elaborate, please.
Well done. Well, non-cooperation. See, the thing, a lot of the tactics, as laid out by the primary scholar in this field, a guy named Gene Sharp, who's recently passed away, 198 of our 199 tactics come from his scholarship. A number of those tactics he labels under the rubric of non-cooperation. And he says non-cooperation is probably, of all the tactics, one of the most powerful you can use because almost everybody counts on cooperation from the people in the room or the people in the workplace or whatever in order to get their objective met. So in that case, Bernie Sanders was relying on the cooperation of the people who came to the rally. That is, listen respectfully. That's the way we cooperate, right, to a rally. He was relying on that in order to be able to do his thing. Okay, so It's very powerful to non-cooperate with that expectation and to interrupt what he's doing. And in this case, a particular way, I mean, there are many ways of interrupting, but one way to interrupt is the way that Black Lives Matter works. And it's so powerful that you can even turn around a national campaign. And they did that.
How do you mean that?
How do
they turn around that campaign?
Oh, by getting Sanders to broaden his perspective by including racism as an institutionally based, you know, part of what goes on. Now, he was arrested in the civil rights movement years ago and so on. He knew perfectly well, but he was, he had left it out up until that time because he was so worried about Hillary Clinton's ties to Wall Street and, you know, and the Democratic Party in general being controlled by Wall Street and the economic elite, and kept wanting to hammer on that point and thinking, if you don't just hammer always on the same point, then people are never going to get it. And he wasn't getting a fair deal for the mass media, let's face it. And so he just thought, I have to hammer for the next, you know, however many months I've got to hammer on the same point, and eventually Americans may wake up to the reality of the economic control. And I can understand where he was coming from. But the thing is that I also agree with Black Lives Matters that the economy of the U.S. is actually intricately involved with racism and counts on racism in order to remain intact. That is, the economic elite, by playing blacks and whites against each other, are entrenching themselves in their powerful role. And therefore, Sanders needed to make that connection. And thank you, Black Lives Matters, for doing that work.